everyone, and welcome to the Cinema Faith Podcast for September 2016. I'm your host, Jonathan Butrin, and I'm joined once again by the prodigal son, Mr. Tim Nelson. As you all know, Tim abandoned us last month.
I went on vacation, man.
I know. I wasn't the only one who grieved your loss, and just hoped you'd come home safely and you're back, and we're so grateful.
It was a good vacation.
Yes,
man.
Vacation. You visited, what, every national park in America, I believe?
No. A few, like four.
It looked like it. Yeah.
So there are two film connections of where I visited.
Go.
I visited Devil's Tower. Which, do you know the film connection of Devil's Tower?
No.
Close Encounters, 1977. That's
yes.
Richard Dreyfuss' character makes the Devil's Tower out of mashed potatoes, and then he's drawn there by the aliens.
Oh, I love that
So
scene.
I went and saw it. I never saw it before. Very cool. And the second one is I got to go check out where they filmed River Runs Through It.
Nice. Brad Pitt?
With Brad
Robert
Pitt.
Robert Redford, yeah.
And yeah, exactly.
Fantastic.
So that was cool.
Great. I'm glad you got a good vacation. It actually worked out really good because we were able to have our first guest on the program, Jason Thompson, good friend of mine from Milwaukee. And we had an awesome discussion talking about Hell or High Water, which you have to see immediately.
So basically, I leave.
Yeah.
And you guys review the best movie of the year
so far. Captain Fantastic is, I think, the best movie of the year.
But the reviews,
yes.
The podcasts, I leave for
one
podcast.
Definitely. We reviewed the best film of our podcast show so far. Yeah, this year.
Mm-hmm. That's par for the course for me.
That sums it up.
Yeah.
So thanks again to Jason for coming on the program. It was really fun, and I think he'll be back someday because it was a really good conversation. But we're glad to have you back, Tim. I know our listeners are glad to have you back. Your voice is so reassuring to us all, so thank you for coming back. And today, we are ready to talk about another movie, and it is the big release of September, and that, of course, is Oliver Stone's Snowden. Now, before we get to the movie itself, we have to talk Oliver Stone because we have not actually talked about him before on the show. And as I said, this is truly Oliver Stone's Snowden. It's how every movie of his, it feels like he is the classic auteur, you know. He takes over every shot and he's in control of every facet of the production. And so these are his movies. And so, Tim, when you hear the name Oliver Stone, what's the first thing that comes to your mind?
Probably subversive. I mean, I don't know if he's considered that controversial anymore, but I knew in the 80s he was. And then the thing that comes into mind for me is Platoon. And specifically, there's a scene in Platoon where he's like crying out and he's on his knees. And like, it's on the cover of the VHS. Cause when I was a kid, I'd walk by the VHS of Platoon and I'd be like, what is going on? But Platoon would probably be my first experience with Oliver Stone. And that will always be the movie that for me, marks him.
Well, you mentioned controversy, and that's the first thing that comes to my mind when I think of him, because you're right. Back in the 80s, he was known as a pretty controversial director. One of my favorite movies of his is JFK, and I'm revamping my top 10 right now, and I feel like it's going to come out in my top 10 of all time, because I love that film. It's epic. It's a masterpiece. The way it really comes down to the way it's shot, and this kind of encapsulates a lot of his earlier work. So you look at JFK, and it's he alternates between like color and black and white, and jittery news footage and reality, and you're never quite sure what's true, which fits so perfectly with the theme of that movie. The whole film feels like one big conspiracy theory. It's like a fevered dream. And that's Oliver Stone at his peak to me. But he carried that same style with like Nixon, Natural Born Killers, and other movies. So that was kind of his MO. And so anyway, I mentioned controversy. JFK was controversial because, I mean, it was like the truth. What was the truth, right? He presented like 10 conspiracy theories and was like, you know, it was one of these.
I think it made Congress question like, what is the Warren Commission's findings?
Yes. Yeah, it actually influenced the real-life Warren Commission.
Which kind of freaks me out a little bit because it's a film. It's not like...
Yeah.
That does freak me out a little bit. That you're kind of like, really?
It's
after
proof.
All these... Yeah.
Yeah. And then Natural Born Killers was really controversial for its violence at the time. It was really in-your-face violence. And I think he was critiquing violence, but still it was. And then...
And media.
Yeah, and media.
So
right.
Like, how does the media... Like, how the media glorifies these debased people.
There's that amazing scene what I like, the only scene I really remember from Natural Born Killers was a long time ago, is when they're like, the killers are doing these horrible things, and it's like there's a sitcom playing in the background. They're like, there's like a laugh track or something to these horrible things they're doing, and it's like, it's, yeah, critiquing the media. Then you had Born on the 4th of July with Tom Cruise, which was this really fierce anti-war film. So the dude was known for his controversy, and so like, whether or not you agreed with what he was getting across, there's no question that the material or the way he presented it was fascinating. It was just like this in-your-face, no-holds-barred films, and he did it one after another. So, but then something changed, and to me, when this happened was, well, I remember when I heard that Oliver Stone was going to be directing a movie about 9/11. And this just, like, my brain popped, right? Because I'm, like, thinking a JFK version of 9/11 with, like, conspiracy theories and, like, blood-soaked patriotism, you know? And I thought it was just going to be outrageous, like his earlier films. And then I saw the movie, and it was so ordinary. Did you watch World Trade Center?
So I haven't seen that.
Yeah.
No, but, like, I have an explanation. Okay. I've been thinking about this a little bit, about why do films not have the power that they had in
because it continued on past World Trade Center in the same style.
So my thoughts are, he's a true like baby boomer filmmaker.
Okay.
And we have a lot of them. You could even argue like some of the ones that we don't think of it being that way are that way, like Tarantino is.
Sure.
Weird, right? You think him as Gen X. No. But my thoughts are like his own life experience is very much like going from innocent belief and having that kind of basically totally shattered. And you see that in the Vietnam War. You see that in JFK. You see that like where, hey, with this innocent nation, and now, well, wait a minute. Could there be a conspiracy to kill our president? Could there be? And then Nixon. And then, even Salvador. So like all these ideas are like, we started out innocent. We had this idyllic kind of sense of our government, of ourselves, and then everything is really deeply corrupt when you really learn about it. I think that's a very baby boomer kind of experience, and I don't think that's necessarily the experience of people who are younger. And so I think his films lack the ability to move us. It may not be so much that the films are, that he has changed that much, but maybe it's just, he doesn't really, I don't think we like reach back to some idyllic state where we were untouched anyway. Do you know what I mean?
So you think it's a generational thing as far as like...
Yeah.
Okay.
It's also his life experience too, because I mean, he went to Vietnam. He started out much more kind of blind patriotism.
Yeah.
And then became much more critical.
Which is a theme in a lot of his works, about you have this guy who's really patriotic and conservative. Even in Born on the 4th of July, I remember Tom Cruise is like, you know, wants to serve his country, praying before the cross. And then like by the end of that movie, but he's made a lot of great movies. I mean, if you think about it, and who can forget Wall Street? Don't forget Wall Street. But like even the sequel to Wall Street is another perfect case in point. Like Money Never Sleeps, this PG-13 sequel that totally felt safe compared to, I mean, think about the possibilities of Gordon Gekko in the modern world, and you watch that movie and you're like, that's it, that's all you got. And that's what I'm talking about. It just feels like we're missing that controversial in your face Oliver Stone, and he just hasn't come back since World Trade Center. I don't mean to be disrespectful at all, because probably, you know, making a movie about 9/11 in the JFK style would have been horrendously offensive and everyone would have been upset and no studio would have financed it, so I get that. But it feels like that set off this sort of, not to be crass, but like a neutered Oliver Stone that kind of has felt like it's been that way ever since. But anyway, so what I was hoping for Snowden was that we'd have a return to that, right? So you have this kind of ripped out of the headline story that has a lot of controversy behind it. And I was like, this is a perfect chance for him to get back into his groove. And that's what my mindset was going into the movie. So Tim, what were you hoping for when you went into Snowden?
So we've kind of alluded to this in earlier podcasts. But this idea that everyone should have seen this coming, and if we had just looked for it, we would have seen it. So we talk about Moneyball. We talked about, this is a theme we have going when we talk about movies.
Right.
It's almost kind of like its own genre now. I was hoping there would be like aha, and it would have been like that. Oh my gosh, how did this? There would be some kind of discovery that we would have going into this, like where we would kind of discover things along with Snowden. And I don't feel that way at all. I just feel like there's some guy out there who's like a computer geek that we can't relate to at all. who happens to, like, you know, have some kind of moral compass, mm-hmm. which is just not enough for a character.
Well, yeah. How familiar with you were with the whole Snowden story? Were you very familiar with the details of it?
Yeah, so okay. like following it, yeah.
So I wasn't. I went into it kind of, I think, the ideal Oliver Stone viewer, where I knew very little about all the details of Snowden. I knew it was basically had something to do with this guy, you know, leaking details about computer surveillance. That's all I knew, but I didn't have much knowledge of the details, and I also hadn't seen the documentary, because there's a documentary called Citizen 4, which right. is supposedly incredible, and it won an Oscar.
We should have seen the documentary Citizen 4.
No, but I purposely didn't see it, because I knew that it would taint my experience of this movie, because I know that I read that he cribbed a lot from the documentary. So I knew very little about it, so that's what I went to going in, and we're going to get to your criticisms, because they're very valid. but let me just briefly give a plot synopsis, in case anyone is where I was, where they're not quite sure what this movie's about. So basically, you got Edward Snowden, who's this guy with this genius mind, especially when it comes to computers, and he really wants to serve his country. And he starts off going into the army, and he's discharged after getting hurt. And so, but he still really wants to serve, and so he ends up serving through the CIA. He gets drafted into the CIA, and he goes all the way up through the ranks because he's brilliant. He gets all the security clearances, and with that comes knowledge that he wasn't prepared for. Specifically, that our government at the time he was working for them actually had the ability to spy on anyone in the world. So, like, you would type in a Google search of someone's name. Well, this was like the ultimate Google search that pulled up things that people didn't put public. They're private things, bank documents and hidden Facebook messages and accounts and things like that. And they could even turn on your computer, your camera on your computer or your phone without the light coming on, so you wouldn't even know they were watching you. And so this was all under the guise of trying to stop terrorists, of course, but Snowden realized that this technology was getting abused and he wanted to expose it. So he did, and he exposed it to the press, and he was considered a traitor for it. And that's like the most basic synopsis. Left a lot of details out, so you can still enjoy the movie, but that brings you up to speed about what we're talking about.
A lot of arduous details.
Yes. Actually, yeah, there's nothing. But anyway.
The film will cover them all.
So, all right, the big question is the style of the movie, okay? Because we just talked about this contrast between old style and new style. So what did you think of the way the movie was presented, as far as a visual palette and just the presentation of the material?
Boring.
Yes. 100% agree.
It was boring. It just seemed like, and I didn't get really into cinematography. I've talked about this before. For me to notice cinematography, it takes me 3 or 4 viewings of a film, and I'm not going to put $40 into this film.
No.
And so for me to notice that stuff, but it just came off like a very boring, like it was edited boring.
Yeah.
Everything about it was just kind of like, there was darkness to a lot of the shots, and they had really kind of extensive sets, mm-hmm. Which I didn't think they really took that much advantage of. But most of that film was like shot in some rooms with real dark, with uplighting the face and like yeah. really dark. And it had kind of like this 90s, almost like a 90s feel to it. I don't know how to explain that.
Well, it just felt like a chronology of the events. Like, that, you know, it didn't feel like a story at all. Like,
with some better music?
With a little better music. How many times did they have an exterior shot with like Tokyo, Monday, June 14th? Like 20 times. It gets to the point where like, we don't care where he is. Just, can you tell us a story? We want to be, you know. Yeah.
Yeah, I thought they could probably... Yeah, it really was that way. You're like, look, I don't... Yeah, it did. There was like unnecessary detail.
Yeah, it was. Plethora of unnecessary detail that wasn't interesting in the slightest.
It didn't feed into any of the meaning. If I wanted that, I could go read old archived newspaper articles.
Right. I mean, now I will say that because I was paying attention to the visual element, there is some flashes of Oliver Stone's old days. So you have these like kind of visual asides where, you know, they're talking about spying and they zoom in on a camera, or there's like these like digital kind of simulations of what they're talking about. So there was a little bit of that, but overall, I would say this is definitely still in the vein of post-World Trade Center Oliver Stone. It's very safe. presentation of the events. I mean, if you think about it, this is a really controversial story where it's a spy thriller. This guy's churning on his own government. He's stealing secrets, but yet, is there any moment where you're like, oh my gosh, and your heart's pounding, and you're like, is he going to do it? Like, my pulse didn't raise slightly.
Yeah, and I think there was supposed to be a lot of tension in the room.
Yeah.
And there's scenes that are in the hotel room when he's like basically giving it up, and you're just waiting for somebody to come in and kill them all.
Like, right.
But it's there's not, there's no tension in the scene, so you're just kind of like, yeah. And you kind of know how it's going to end already, so you're like, they didn't kill him, we all know what happened.
Yeah, and that is hard with a true story. Because
you know.
But there still has to be a way to generate tension.
There's no tension in the film. And then I feel like there's not enough character in the Snowden. I mean, maybe because Snowden doesn't have that much character. He has cool backstory.
Yeah.
So he's like kind of... He is going through character change.
Well, let's talk about that because, okay, so Joseph Gordon-Levitt plays Snowden. Okay, you familiar?
Yeah, he's horrible.
You familiar with his work? Okay.
Well, that was some terrible acting.
Well, I wouldn't say it's terrible, but listen.
Maybe that's just how Snowden is.
Snowden, his portrayal of Snowden is kind of a microcosm for that dude's career. Okay, like I don't think he's ever outright bad, but there's never been a point in anything I've watched him in where I was like, whoa, that's great acting, right? He gets the job. Job done to an extent. Okay, he's not terrible.
Well, I'm assuming that he is trying to kind of get into the Snowden,
right.
The Snowden character.
Well, this is what I wanted to say, and I think that's a cop out, and I hate that cop out. I felt the same thing about Sully, which is playing in theaters right now with Tom Hanks. Is like they're saying, you know, oh, he's an emotionally reserved guy, but it's like it's still boring. Like, it doesn't matter if you're being true to real life. If your movie's boring, it's boring. That's it.
Yeah.
Like, you have to find a way. Maybe some character shouldn't be filmed if he's that inert. You
yeah,
know?
Yeah,
honestly.
Yeah. So it's like, did you pick the right story? Or can you... I mean, I think this is why it's not a documentary, is that you have some license here.
Exactly.
Make the guy a little more interesting.
Why not?
I mean, I think the problem being is that if you're making a film that's addressing truth...
Mm-hmm.
Then you're trying to be true in how you make that film, hopefully.
Right.
So if you take too much license, then you become the propagandist. You become the source of this untruth. So it's kind of like he's kind of in a corner here.
But this is what's so frustrating to me, because back in the day, it was all about taking license. This is what Oliver Stone excelled at, right?
Right.
And we're in a moment where people are accepting of that. I brought up in a recent review Hamilton. Have you caught the Hamilton bug?
Sure.
My wife is like obsessed with it. But like the point is that Alexander Hamilton wasn't a Puerto Rican rapper. Right, but it works. It's like taking, and I'm not saying make Snowden into something completely different, but at least try to get to something that is interesting while staying true to the
we can accept a degree of that this is fanciful. I kept thinking about a film. Did we review The Big Short?
We didn't, but it was great.
So I kept thinking of The Big Short and thinking about how McKay takes license and he makes a joke about taking license. Like, he's like, this isn't exactly how this happened. But this is a cool... He's like...
That's
this
like
is,
worked into the movie. Exactly.
Yeah, and the joke is worked in. He's like, this meeting never occurred.
Yep.
But the meeting was really interesting. Yeah. So McKay basically makes a joke out of when he takes license.
And there's a movie about finances, which has the potential to be the most boring movie ever, and yet it wasn't, right?
Right.
Exactly.
And so he's able to, you know, make these characters interesting who are like basically... they're similar right brain... kind of investment bankers
talking about things we don't understand,
talking about stuff that we can't understand. But he does things like, and this is why I think McKay, this is wonderful. I love having a comedy director do these things. So he puts people in, like, he puts what's her name in a bubble bath and has her describe credit default swaps or something, right?
Yes.
So that's like brilliant. That's creative. That's why he get best director.
He was nominated. I don't think he got it.
Okay.
But yeah.
So, but that's why you get nominated for that. Stone does. There's absolutely no creativity in this film.
Nothing.
I mean, like, honestly, I don't feel any creativity. You know, both of us were saying, man, I'd love to see a documentary. It seems like it'd be more interesting.
Yes. Yes.
Let's see the actual thing. Yeah.
Well, and I read reviews about the documentary, and they use these words like mesmerizing, and there's nothing mesmerizing about this film. I can't even imagine watching this movie again. Honestly, can you imagine watching this movie again? Like, you know, when you watch some, when you're like are showing a movie to someone, and you're like, oh, this is a great part. Watch this. Like, what? Name one scene that you would say that about. Well, I have one, but I'll get to that in a second.
Yeah. I don't know if I have something that I think is so great about the movie.
Can we talk about Nicolas Cage? What was he doing there? What was Nicolas Cage doing in this movie?
Sitting on the couch and like flipping the channels, kind of what I was kind of tempted to do myself.
Look.
Can we go home and watch TV? Can I just hang out with Nicolas Cage? Because this movie's really dragging.
By the way, I happened to text him while you were in the middle of the movie and to confirm our time for the podcast, and you were like, watching the movie now, it sucks.
That's the two-word review that you can trust folks.
That's a two-word. But Nicolas Cage, man, come on. What happened? Okay. You want to talk about great acting? Nicolas Cage is capable of great acting.
Oh gosh. Are we in this conversation right now?
Matchstick Men. The guy can bring it when he Raising Arizona. Absolutely.
That's the only film I like him in.
But I don't know what he's been up to lately, but he's basically this character. Can you call it a character? It looks like Nicolas Cage showed up to the set, grabbed a copy of the script and was like, give me like 20 minutes. And then just went for it. And it feels like the first take.
Horrible. He's in there.
Yeah.
He's in the film
kind of substantially. He's got like three scenes, but they're long.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Here's another question I have. Okay. The girlfriend.
Yeah. Who I thought was probably the best actor in the movie, honestly.
But what does she add to the, like, she has to, she's basically, they're working, they're basically trying their best.
She's the only thing that keeps that movie watchable.
Well, they're trying to add complexity to the Snowden character.
Yeah.
And they have to add her because she's the anti-Snowden.
Correct, right, emotionally. Yeah. She actually has an arc and has emotions, right?
She's like, she's on a stripper pole in several scenes. I mean, is that
I don't think it's to rehearse for being a stripper. I think it's like pole exercise.
Whatever, that in several scenes she's in a stripper on a stripper pole.
Yes.
Which is like the anti-Snowden, right? He's like a computer geek that's like hanging out, like, you know,
right,
talking about, you know, his latest, you know, code that he's typing. So like you need, so she's kind of this anti-Snowden figure. The audience can't relate to Snowden. Like it's like, absolutely. I don't relate to this guy at all. I'm like, no, I don't need a security clearance for my job.
Blank piece of paper. Yeah, nothing.
Right, and so we can't relate to him. He's not like, I think of, like I said, Platoon. Mm-hmm. The Charlie Sheen character we can relate to. He's journaling in his book. He's kind of an everyman to a certain degree. I don't know who relates to Snowden. Like maybe like there's computer programmers that are like flocking to this movie. Sorry, Dave. Nice. And they're like, I deeply relate to Snowden here as he's doing his cryptography. But I don't, which is funny because now I'm thinking about it. Like there was another movie about cryptography a while back. What was that movie? It was I think it was Enigma or whatever, the Enigma code in World War II. That was super interesting. Right? He's cracking codes. Anyway, I forgot the name of the movie.
Oh, With
Cumberbatch.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Super great movie, totally relating to his character.
Totally.
Or even like a
Nash. Well, he was an interesting character, though.
Well, even like Nash, right? Mathematician. Mm-hmm. They take enough liberty where you can relate to these guys.
Yes.
I feel like there was no liberty taken with Snowden, and it makes him totally unrelatable. So you have to have, like, what can we add to this guy? Well, let's take his girlfriend.
Which is his girlfriend. Played by Shailene Woodley. And honestly, she is the best thing in the movie, which is not saying much, but...
Yeah. And so...
I know.
Yeah, it's just kind of too bad. I mean, she's doing her best to, like, kind of make this interesting.
she's literally holding the film on her shoulders. Like, can we... Yeah. Any scene that has any spark has her in it, but...
Right.
Yeah.
And so she, like, so there's, like, they're creating some kind of emotional connection. Because he needs emotional connection, because I'm not seeing it anywhere else. you know. Except maybe with this Rubik's Cube. Maybe he has emotional connection there. But, like, I don't see that emotional connection. I think it's hard to connect to a character that doesn't have that.
Yep.
And she's really working that the best she can. But it's still, I think it still falls flat.
But look, here's the thing. Okay, so agreed. The presentation is as standard as it gets, but I wouldn't call it a horrible film. I mean, at the end of the day, Oliver Stone's been around the block a few times. He knows how to position the camera. He knows how to edit a scene. Okay, this is a competently made movie, but I'm not going to say it's a train wreck. We're not like watching an amateur film, but at the same time, yes, it could have been. It was boring in the way he presented it. But what was interesting to me, and probably this is because I was very unfamiliar with the details, was I thought that the central debate at the center of it was compelling to me. Okay, like this idea of that Stone presents this whole debate about the information that Snowden steals through a variety of different characters, and he presents different perspectives. Okay, so you have at the one hand, when Snowden first talks to his girlfriend about the fact that they can watch you through your camera, okay, what's her response? Her response is, "So what? I got nothing to hide," right?
Which is what a lot of us would say.
A lot of us would say.
Because we have to relate to somebody. It ain't going to be Snowden, so we're going to relate to his girlfriend.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I think that that's a lot of how of us feel. You know, if some government agent wants to watch me, you know, type on my laptop and that's going to help them fight terrorists, okay, you know, whatever, small price to pay, right? But the Snowden, his response is that, look, this whole idea of this all being about terrorism is a complete ruse. What actually is happening in the eyes of Oliver Stone and Snowden, and you can agree or disagree, is that the government really is trying to establish supremacy over its own citizens and also the whole world. They're basically, we're at a point, according to Snowden, where with a flick of a switch, they could just turn off the world. Basically, and the government wants to be in that position. And so the question is, should they have that kind of power? And when it comes to the whole spying angle, and I know you're going to take off on this because we were having a little discussion before this, but there's this one scene that I think was probably the only, if I'm looking back, like standout scene for me. And it's really when this whole debate hit home. So Snowden is talking to his boss and they're having like a video conference, and his boss's head is like larger than life, takes
it's
up
a whole
this whole wall.
Right. Yeah.
And Snowden's really, really small by comparison, right? And this camera zoomed in super close to his boss, and so it looks like menacing and glowering over him. And basically Snowden is talking at one point about how he's kind of worried about his girlfriend or something, and his boss says, "Well, if you're worried about her cheating on you with that jock, don't worry, she's not." And it's just like, whoa, you know, like for Snowden and for us, it like hits home, this whole debate, like this creepy old guy is basically keeping tabs on this, on his girlfriend's sex life. And it just feels like a violation, right? That's this point of like where you're going, this has nothing to do with terrorism. You are abusing this power. And I think it alludes to something else. What were you saying before?
So like, this is, a lot of people are alluding to 1984, say George Orwell novel, like where you have like whole walls of screens. Even like, you guys probably remember, some of y'all remember if you're old like me, the Mac commercial that has a whole screen, like a wall that's a screen. But the idea of it, Orwell's novel is talking about totalitarian governments that will stop at nothing to kind of basically have absolute power. And they do it through policing people's thoughts by secret surveillance, by having cameras everywhere. And so that's like one of the things, like you see him alluding to this 1984 idea. It's where we get a lot of Orwellian. That would be like, if you've ever heard that described as Orwellian, that's from 1984. Thought police is a 1984 term.
Yes.
There's a lot of things that we use that some of us don't realize that they actually come from that novel. But that screen, like a giant screen, which is a direct allusion to the novel because it's like in the novel. And there's other things in the novel too that you see here. And one of the things that they do, so the NSA, this is one that I think is a connection. I don't know, maybe it's debatable.
Okay.
But like the most famous quote in 1984, like the most and it's dealing with like futurism, like here's what the future will be like, is this one where it basically says, "But always do not forget this, Winston. Always there will be intoxication of power, constantly increasing and constantly growing subtler. Always at every moment there will be a thrill of victory, the sensation of trampling on an enemy who is helpless. And if you want a picture of the future, imagine a boot stamping on a human face forever." Mm. And one of the things that Snowden and his buddies were doing at the NSA facility is they're watching basically people get killed by drones over and over again. Which to me is like very similar to this idea of like the sensation of trampling an enemy who is helpless.
Wow.
And it's like, that's this idea that Orwell paints for the future. And I think Stone picks up on that, and he basically makes us watch drone strikes over and over again. And this whole idea of drones.
And they just keep queuing up the next one.
They queue up the next one, and everyone's like jacked up that they killed a helpless enemy.
Yeah.
But this gets
back to the power that Snowden and Oliver Stone, and by proxy, is accusing the government of wanting. They want the whole world at their fingertips. Yeah.
Right. So, yeah. And it's interesting, like, you know, he talks, when they do a CIA interview in the beginning for Snowden, they say, like, what are the things that are his influences? He's like, Campbell, like Joseph Campbell, where we get Heart of Darkness, Apocalypse Now, right? Mm-hmm. So this idea, which is kind of funny because that's kind of what that's his journey is a little bit, the Heart of Darkness. So he starts out where he's like totally in line with the government, and then he realizes, whoa, like this is, I have to like basically retreat into something that, and go into exile. But then the other one is he refers to Ayn Rand, which is Atlas Shrugged. So like the idea of like completely, that if a society is going to thrive, we've got to have absolute, protect individual rights. So he kind of lines up with that whole individual rights thing.
Yeah.
Now it's objectivism. So it's like totally it's anti-Christian. Like, so the whole Ayn Rand stuff is totally not, you cannot like reconcile that with Christianity. but you can like with a, you can have a civil right, kind of some sense of individual rights based on that.
But what you can, what struck home for me is, you know, there's a lot of symbolism in scripture about light exposing the darkness and the darkness hiding. And I think at the end of the day, that's what Snowden was trying to do, is shine a light on something that was dark and mysterious. And but the other side of the debate, and I think his boss brings this up at one point, is that the darkness is necessary in the eyes of the government because the bad guys can't know what we are capable of doing. And if everyone knows, then there's no longer the element of surprise. So the darkness is actually part of keeping us safe. And his boss says at one point that people aren't really interested in being free. They just want to be secure, right?
Right, which is like that's a classic debate. Like, you know, like I took a bunch of political philosophy. So the classic debate is that if you want to have safety, you have to trade, your rights for it. Mm-hmm. So like you have to trade individual autonomy if you want safety. That's kind of how the understanding of that social contract. So you have to, there's trade-offs. And right. So the question is like for him, did we even make a trade-off? Like, we didn't even know we did this. When we signed up for iTunes.
Yep.
Did we really read through that? Did we really sign up for that? Do we know what we're getting into? So I think there's some of that idea, which is that we're not even realizing what kind of pact we're entering into when we exchange our safety.
Right, which is Snowden's whole point. He's basically like, let's let the people decide whether we're comfortable with this. And the other side would say, by the time you do that, then we can no longer do it. But that's where the debate is. And I think it's an interesting debate. And I think that's what, for me, kept the movie watchable. I wanted to find out what happened next, and I was interested in that, in those viewpoints. And I don't think, what's interesting about the debate is I don't think there's one clear side that you can say, oh, well, this is obviously the right way to look at what Snowden did. You know, there's an internet petition right now going on for Obama to pardon Snowden, and you know, I don't know. You're torn about it, right? On the one hand, you're like, I think it's good that we know about this, and I think it's caused some great reforms. On the other hand, do we want to give carte blanche for the next guy to just sort of spill?
So that kind of, that came up for me. So the question, like, for me would be, like, yes, maybe it was necessary what he did.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe should he not go to jail for that? Because he basically compromised national security.
Right.
So from the standpoint of, like, he put us all at more risk by doing that. And that doesn't get addressed in the film whatsoever.
No. And it would have been interesting to explore more of that. Yes.
Right. So, and I'm not like really, that's not typically my route, but I'm trying, like, how can I think about this in a different way? Like, I wouldn't, like, no, really. Like,
right.
Because I think Stone is, there is.
Because you hate drawing those meta connections. You want to stay focused on the film, but the film is so boring that you're willing to entertain these political ideas.
No, I'm okay with that. I guess, like the biggest thing is, like, I think we got to be careful with Stone, because, like, I even look at who he hangs with, and he's hanging with Michael Moore.
Sure.
And
yeah,
not
no,
that
there's
I dis-
a clear agenda there.
Well,
yeah,
not
totally.
That I disagree with Michael Moore or with Stone, but I'm kind of like, they do tend to, like, pull the, they tend to be controversial. They'll tend to, like, they'll want to put their best foot forward, and then sometimes they work in hyperbole.
Sure.
Sometimes they work in conjecture. And so being aware of that. But I look at that and I go, you know what? This dude basically decided he would compromise. If you want to talk about democratic, the dude in some ways decided he's going to compromise the safety of everyone in the nation because he has an individual ideal.
Hmm.
Which, if you look at it from that standpoint, you go, Wow, that's like pretty selfish in your decision making.
You could definitely argue that for sure. Yeah.
So I'm trying to argue like the other side. Yeah.
And I think that's what's compelling is that every side has a good argument. I think there really is truth on all sides of this debate, honestly.
Right. And did he have any checks and balances on him? So like if he just decided, well, I think so basically he decided personally, like this is something I disagree with, therefore I'm going to expose all of our security info to like everyone in the world.
Yeah.
So there's an argument to be made that like that is an incredibly selfish thing to do. But I don't think Stone's making that argument. Stone's saying like
he's a hero in the movie. He's a hero.
Yeah. And that he's suffering in asylum.
In Russia.
Right, he's suffering in asylum because of he's being cast out and so now he's gone from Hawaii to Russia, you know. And he's suffering for this these ideals, and that's true to a degree. But I'd also say, like, I watched in the same week I watched the film Gandhi, and I'm like, he ain't Gandhi.
Nice. I love it.
Yeah.
So, all right, final thoughts. Just sum up your take on the movie in a few minutes here. Go.
So my take on the movie is, I think in general Stone is stale. Mm-hmm. I think he's past his prime, and I think he was a great filmmaker, but I think it's hard for him to know what controversy is anymore because he's probably, I mean, like think about how he got this idea. He's like reading the paper, like drinking some coffee in his mansion, right? He's like, this looks good. This fits into what I believe. I'm not saying that's how it happened, but I think where he was the strongest is when he came out of personal experience. Emotional experience, and when he's detached from emotion, I think you end up with something that's not even as good as a documentary. It's just a string of facts that happens to have a little better lighting and some better sound. So that's how I feel about the film. It's a disappointment to me. I would definitely get my money back for my ticket. That's kind of how I feel about this film. I wouldn't do that. Like I have respect for his other work.
Yeah,
but I just think it was kind of a letdown, and I think they should have released it earlier because it definitely wasn't Academy worthy, and no. I think that's why they released it later.
Right, which is why I had good hopes for it.
Right.
This is the time, yeah.
So I was like, who gave him that advice? Somebody's kissing his butt, I think. Because the film doesn't do it. He needs a better editor. Yes. Somebody needs to stand up to him because this film could have been edited down to an hour and 40 minutes.
It was like 2 hours and 18 minutes.
Yeah, and it would have been a lot punchier that way too.
Letter grade, if you had to quantify.
C.
Okay, straight up C. So for me, like I said, there are flashes of the old Oliver Stone, but for the most part, this is definitely, like Tim said, stale Oliver Stone, the new sanitized version that's kind of post World Trade Center, and it's a very straightforward telling of a story that's actually really interesting, and it's just sad.
Injected boredom into the interesting story.
It's not a terrible film. I won't say that because, again, it's not unwatchable. I think there is a debate that's interesting. I think it's presented. You kind of see the different sides of that. And I definitely have no desire to see it again or to show it to anybody. But it's competently made, I guess. I would give it, this is being really generous, a B minus strictly for...
Well, that is generous.
Just for being... because I was still interested to see what happens next. But in reality, I think for me, a C plus would probably be more justified. And,
yeah. So we're down... I don't want to like stop because I feel like we really just like downed Oliver Stone for a lot of the... Especially younger listeners. I really want to say, like, go watch some of his earlier stuff.
Absolutely. He's made masterpieces. Yeah. Please watch JFK if you haven't seen JFK. That's my personal favorite. But, I mean, there's so many.
So the Academy Awards that he got were Platoon, Born on the 4th of July, and then was it National Born Killers get an Academy Award, too?
I believe so. Quentin Tarantino wrote that.
Yeah.
And Born on the 4th of July is so good. If you have any, if you've bought into this idea that Tom Cruise is just like some, you know, yuppie rich guy who can't act, go watch movies like Born on the 4th of July, because that is an incredible Tom Cruise performance. And Rain Man. Yeah.
Yeah. So I would say, like, this is a bad review of this film, but hopefully you will go to Netflix or Google, you know, your Google Play or whatever, and go find some Oliver Stone films and watch them, because the early stuff is really good. And we hope that I hope this isn't like that it ends badly. I hope there's another film that I hope he has one good film left in him, but this wasn't it.
Me too. Anything that he did prior to, I would say, the year 2000 is well worth watching.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely check it out. So there you go. That film is Snowden. It is playing in a theater near you, but, you know, don't see it. watch the documentary Citizen 4. That's next on my list.
Me too.
I've heard it's incredible. It won an Oscar for Best Documentary. You can't go wrong with that. And I think it's everything this film, as far as the subject matter and the details, is in the documentary, but it's actually presented in a really edge of your seat way. Imagine that. And actually, what's interesting too, if you have seen the movie, is that there is a documentary filmmaker that's in the hotel room with Snowden reporters. That is, it's not really her in the movie. It's Melissa Leo playing her, but that character is actually the documentary director that is did the documentary. So check that out. And let's hope that Oliver Stone returns to his roots someday and go see JFK. All right, man, that's it. So great to have you back on the show.
Good to be here, man.
We are Tim is here to stay. Up next is Birth of a Nation. So
controversy, man. Here we go.
Yeah. So, all right, man. Keep the faith, my friends. We will see you next time.